You are listening to Larry Connors, USA.
You want answers? I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
This is Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA. Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
March the 11th, 2021. Biden was going to do this tomorrow. I guess he needed nap time. Well, I mean, their excuse is we want to make it happen quicker. Today, he signed into law the $2 trillion coronavirus relief package. I know they say $1.9 trillion. It's $2 trillion. Give me a break. He signed it. As the Democrats muscled it through Congress without any Republican support. None. And he said, this historic legislation is about rebuilding the backbone of this country and giving the people of this nation, working people, the middle class folks, people who built the country, a fighting chance. Well, he's talking about the $1,400 check for many, an extension of weekly unemployment. That's all good. But within that is a lot of money for things that had nothing to do with COVID or COVID relief. And Senate Republican leader Mitch McConnell says it's a multi-trillion dollar Trojan horse. That's the way he describes it. He said this wasn't a bill to finish off the pandemic. It was a multi-trillion dollar Trojan horse full of bad old liberal ideas. He said Biden's own staff keep calling this legislation, quote, the most progressive bill in American history. Hardly the common sense bipartisanship the president promised. And in fact, Nancy Pelosi, in announcing it yesterday that we've done it, we've accomplished it, and so forth, she said, we've done it with bipartisan support. You have not. It's a lie. Chuck Schumer said bipartisan. No, you didn't. Now they're on to something else, and that is your guns. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer says we will move forward with a bipartisan background check act of 2021. It passed the House earlier today, 227 to 203. 227 to 203 in the House. This is going to basically increase laws restricting, controlling guns in the sense that nothing that is already on the book is going to be changed other than just making things more restrictive. We have plenty of laws on the book if we enforce them properly anyway. It's not going to change anything, but it is another move forward. And Senate Majority Leader Schumer said, no more hopes and prayers and thoughts and prayers. A vote is what we need. A vote. They're coming for the guns. Congressman Mike Thompson claiming that 90% of Americans support his universal background check gun control. 90%? Where's the fact on that? Where is that? He put that out on tweet, on his Twitter account. Has anybody questioned it? Have they taken it down? Have they labeled it false information? Have they labeled anything? No, they haven't. They just let it stand. And there's not a single, I don't know of a single study of 90% of Americans supporting universal background gun control checks, unless he's just talking to Democrats. Maybe he got 90% there. Maybe. In the meantime, Senator Tom Cotton, Republican of Arkansas, says that newly appointed Attorney General Merrick Garland will basically continue Joe Biden's, quote, extreme open borders amnesty agenda. Garland became AG based on a 70-30 vote. During his confirmation hearing, Cotton asked him about a very simple question. What do you think about entering our country illegally? Should that be a crime? Is that not a simple enough question to ask a future attorney general? His answer, I hadn't thought about that one. That's something I just never had thought about. Where the hell have you been? Congressman Chip Roy, Republican of Texas. I apologize, Chip. Republican of Texas says DHS is telling him, insiders, because he can't speak publicly, 11,000 border crossers have been released into the U.S. in the first 2 months of this year. We know they are doing it. We know they're putting them on buses going who knows where, and supposedly they're also using some planes, whether or not they're commercial or private or government. We don't know that, but they're spreading them all over the nation. And in many cases, they have been checked to be positive with COVID, but they can't do anything about it. Got to let them go. This issue about immigration and the crisis, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says, well, I guess the the Republicans couldn't focus enough on Dr. Seuss and cancel culture, so they're going after that. Denver area getting ready to be hit with more than 2 feet of snow this weekend. This is going to be a major storm hitting Colorado, Wyoming, and Nebraska. The Centers for Disease Control will soon ease its coronavirus-related physical distancing learning for in-person learning from 6 feet to three. That will be involving schools going forward. And then you got the Texas Attorney General said, I got to file a lawsuit because the city of Austin and Travis County, where the capital city is, they will not accept the governor's mandate that you don't have to have mask mandates anymore. The governor of Texas said, no more mask mandate. In Austin, Texas, they say, no, we're going to mandate it. All right, let's file a suit and fight this out in court.
Larry Connors, USA, news and commentary.
If you think disinfecting a home or office for COVID is way too expensive, I've got great news for you. Wellington Environmental can disinfect most homes for less than $300. I know you were thinking the cost would be two, three, maybe four times as much. Wellington can professionally disinfect most homes for less than $300. Cost for most offices, not much higher. You get the same professional treatment that Wellington provides hospitals and nursing homes. Also, Wellington is selling professional fogging devices. The cost, $500. But say you heard about it from Larry Connors and save $100. Here's a phone number to schedule Wellington to treat your home or office. 314-644-4930. I urge you to get on the schedule early. 314-644-4930. 644-4930. Be well with Wellington. Wellington Environmental. This segment of Larry Connors USA is brought to you by my friends at John Beal Roofing, covering homes and businesses throughout the Midwest. Best quality, lowest prices. John Beal. 1-800-NEW-ROOF. 1-800-NEW-ROOF.
Love and happiness. But wait a minute, something's going wrong. Someone's on the phone. 3 o'clock in the morning. Yeah. Talking about how she can make it right. Yeah.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Good afternoon, everyone. And this is a... Thank you. This is indeed a special and good afternoon. This is a momentous day in the history of our country because we have passed historic, consequential, and transformative legislation. First, I want to express recognition and appreciation to the President of the United States, Joe Biden. President Biden's vision and his determination were so apparent to the American people, and the reason why this legislation enjoys the support of 75% of the American people in a strong bipartisan way across the country. We thank him for his leadership. So on this occasion, and I think I can safely say, and I've said this to my colleagues in the House on the Democratic side, this is the most consequential legislation that many of us will ever be a party to. Who knows what the future may bring, but nonetheless, on this day, we celebrate.
Bah, 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 bah. We celebrate. And you're like, oh, true, this bill could be... Nancy, you're standing outside. Can you take the mask off? Can you? You're standing there outside, and everybody else is standing behind you, and all the reporters are a good 20 feet away from you. You can't take your mask off so we can hear you better. But she got her point across and her part of her lie. 75% of the American people like this legislation, the COVID bill. 75. Where is that number? Who's got that number? And then to say it's bipartisan, it ain't bipartisan. It ain't. We'll break it down for you. But in the meantime, here they are. So excited. That was her yesterday. And they're talking about that President Biden was going to sign it Friday. I think somebody did not check his sleep schedule and his afternoon nap time. He said, I can't do it Friday. I'm scheduled for a nap, I think. So they're doing it. They did it already today. They say they did it because they want to get this money out quicker. Do you think everything really had to wait on his signature before the wheels started turning? Really? You really believe that? I know you don't. But he did sign it into law today, saying, and I'm quoting him now, this historic legislation is about rebuilding the... And he didn't have a mask on, by the way, because he forgets to carry them with him anyway. This historic legislation is about rebuilding the backbone of this country, giving the people of this nation, working people, middle-class folks, the people who built the country, a fighting chance, Biden said. That's the way it's written by one of these news sources. They give you the quote that's a comma, Biden said. When I was teaching news journalism to students, I'd say, write it conversationally. Would you come up and say, Larry, this measure is going to do this and going to do that and do that, according to Biden? No, you'd come up and say, Biden says. Anyway, I'm down a rat hole again. Poor writing gets to me each and every time. But Senator Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, while you hear these praise from the Democrats in Biden House, historic it is, Mitch McConnell said, Democrats just want to sprint to the front of that parade and claim credit, but the pandemic is not over and this is not helping. And in fact, he points out that's really not going to give the money that everybody says it is. He points out, in fact, in his opinion, it is a multi-trillion dollar Trojan horse, a multi-million dollar Trojan horse. You want to know where some of that money's going? Well, let me give you one for a moment, then we'll come back. I mean, I know they're waving checks in front of everybody and making it look like this is all for you. But I want you to know right now that out of that $2 trillion coronavirus relief package, L.A., the city of L.A. is getting $1.3 billion. For what? Well, because it's a blue city, Larry, you idiot. That's why they got it in there, and that's why they're getting it. And there'll be more examples of that. But let's go to Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and his comments about this historic occasion, as he stated yesterday.
Nancy, and let me thank you for your beautiful exuberance as well. And the thanks goes to the senators who are standing here, our great committee chairs, and all of our senators who pulled together as one unit, beating back killer amendments, making sure the bill was as strong as possible. And I want to salute them. We Democrats made promises, particularly we did in the Senate. We said if we won those two seats in Georgia, we would get things done. Mitch McConnell blocked bills four times in a row. And Mr. Ossoff and Mr. Warnock told the citizens of Georgia if they were elected, they would make sure that the actual promises made would be promises kept, and they have been. So this is a wonderful day for America. This is one of the most consequential pieces of legislation we have passed in decades.
I will agree with that. I mean, these guys are excited. It's transformative, all right. But let's pick apart that statement. When he says it's good for America, and we fought back to preserve it. We fought back killer amendments. Amendments like, why do you want to put in there $350 billion to bail out state and local budgets unrelated to pandemic needs? That's a killer amendment? That's just trying to bring some sanity to what you're trying to do. No, they didn't want to do that. Strings attached to stop states from cutting taxes on their own citizens down the road? No, they don't want to do that. Massive federal school funding spread over several years without requiring a quick reopening? Nope, that's not in there either. That'd be a killer amendment. Sweeping new government benefits, no work requirements, whatever. Again, a killer amendment. We fought back all of those killer amendments. And we got it passed, by God. We got it. And according to Schumer, everybody was in on the play.
I want to salute the House as well. We were a seamless web. And we worked together. Democrats on the House side, Democrats on the Senate side, all together, because we knew how important this was to America.
To America, to their politics, to their political career. To you, not so much. You know, the $1,400 checks, they weigh them around and they look good. I mean, most people could certainly use a $1,400 check. And I'm all for that. I'm all for that. And for those folks who've lost their jobs, they could use a JOB again to open up businesses, as Texas is doing. Yet you get blues in the city, Austin capital, saying we're not going to go along with the stop the mask mandate, as I mentioned a moment ago in news and commentary. What they're doing each and every time is picking and choosing who's going to get the benefit. And you will get some. But we pointed out previously, 9% of this bill, 9% actually goes for COVID relief. COVID relief, 9%. And Senator McConnell points out that if you look at just the $1,400 checks for Americans, that's only 20% of the bill. So right there, there's 80% that, why is it in there? But it's not helping Americans with the rest of the stuff, like giving money to arts, giving money to Planned Parenthood and abortion. Where does that help? And what's it got to do with the pandemic relief? Not a darn thing, Larry. I'll answer my own question. Thank you. Congressman Mike Waltz, Republican of Florida. Because you keep hearing these Democrats go on and on. This is the greatest thing, man, ever, ever. Yeah, he puts it in that context. He said this is, quote, the largest expansion of the welfare state since Lyndon Baines Johnson in the 1960s. Now, there's my fellow Texan, LBJ, referring to. And yes, that's exactly what LBJ did at that time. Same thing the FDR did during the Work Progress, the CPA program that they had underway. And there were times we definitely need to step up and help things start. We started jobs and projects for people. We did start some safety nets for some people that were suffering. And while you might question it, you have to also look at there were a lot of people that needed help, and it helped. But this is just a bogus lie that we're helping. And when they say that $1,400 check is going to cut poverty in half, how in the heck do you come up with those numbers? You can't. They don't justify. There's nothing in there that would say you give everybody a 14, and not everybody's going to get one, of course, but you get everybody a $1,400 check or more, then you will cut poverty in half. What, for maybe a week? Maybe a month? And don't forget, this is just the beginning. This is just the beginning. Last night, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki was on CNN. And she's arguing already, some of this relief bill should be made permanent. Don Lemon, fruitcake aster, stated there are provisions like expanding the child tax credit, increased subsidies for health insurance. Those expire, though, after a year, Jen. How much of President Biden's sales pitch next week will be about convincing Americans that these social safety net measures should be permanent? And her answer, well, a big part. He wants to make the child tax credit permanent. He's talked about that. And certainly he'll look for opportunity to do that, work with members of Congress to get that done. You do understand, a lot of Republicans had no problem with child tax credits and also for charter schools, things of that nature. You do understand that, but right now they're saying, well, you know, we think we can get some support there for sure. Probably not we're going to go for what they have in mind because they don't have details. But what she went on to say, Biden wants to make health care more affordable and accessible. I am for that. I'm not going to fight against that. The question is, how are you going to do it? How are you going to pay for it? Well, it just dawned on me. My God, you got $2 trillion you spent on COVID relief. Maybe take that money and create a health care plan and help people across this nation have health care. How about that? I do believe that no one in this nation should go without health care. No one in this nation should go to bed hungry at night. I believe in those fundamental basic principles in my attitude, in my opinion. But what we got right now is you do it, but who's going to pay for it? How's it going to be paid for? Those are the little sticky points, aren't they? You like that car? Yeah, the salesman said, I'll sell you that car. What do you want to pay for it? I want a good deal. Well, what do you want to pay for it? Well, I'll pay, just tell me what you want to pay for it. I'll pay you a dollar. Oh, no, we're not selling it for a dollar. Well, you asked me what I wanted. That's what I want to pay. I'm not trying to offend my car sales supporters and listeners, because I got a lot of you who are. But you know how that game's played. You're going to offer what you're trying to give them at the same time, maybe offer some undercoating, things of that nature. Nothing wrong with that either. sell up all the time. And that's what the Democrats are doing at this thing, selling up. But Schumer again, yesterday, he might as well have had a stack of these checks in his hand, waving them in the air. Just listen to him.
So what do we say to America? We say to America, help is on the way. Help is on the way. You will receive $1,400 checks by the end of March. Help is on the way. Vaccines will be available far more quickly to far more people at in a shorter time. Help is on the way. Our schools will open safely and more quickly than we thought. Help is on the way. Half of America's children who are in poverty will not be in poverty because of this bill. Help is on the way.
Boy, it sounds fantastic, does it not? I mean, who could be against taking children and families out of poverty? Help is on the way. Well, if you look at, I quoted you a moment ago, if you want to really talk about helping American citizens, I mentioned a moment ago that LA City in this COVID relief package is getting $1.3 billion. How much help do you think that would really help kids in poverty, families in poverty, if you isolate and target just those folks? And you still provide incentive to get them to work and do things. I mean, we're not just going to be a handout state. We've already got generation after generation built on welfare. Coming up, if you want to challenge anyone, you're going to be a racist going forward.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
In the politics lead, 49 days in office now, President Biden has fewer cabinet-level nominees confirmed than any of his recent predecessors, only 13 of 23 positions filled that need Senate approval. Biden has even more nominees on the deputy and assistant level who need confirmation. But some Republicans seem to be laying the groundwork to stop him from getting them confirmed by resorting to what critics see as a decades-long practice Republicans use against Democratic officials from the civil rights community. Misleading attacks.
Oh, my God. That was Jake Tapper, CNN. I have to say, when he first started in politics, it's been 49 days. I thought he was going to say since Biden has been in office and not held a news conference. That's what I was. Oh, I'm kind of stupid, aren't I? He was not going to bring that up. He was using that 49 days, say he can't get a lot of his appointees through because Republicans are racist. That's what he's alluding to. They're bringing up things like civil war, and because some of these nominees are people of color, Republicans are fighting against them. They're talking about specifically Vanita Gupta, who is Biden's pick for Associate Attorney General, Christian Clark, the nominee to head the Justice Department Civil Rights Division. Now, of course, Gupta has been under fire for her past hostile rhetoric toward Republicans. She has now expressed regret that I've said all those things. I'm truly regretful. As soon as you confirm me, I'll start him again. Clark has been scrutinized, favoring some form of defunding police. And I got to say something. This is not going to go over well for some. I want you to take in the context. This is her statement, apparently. And if you said it about any race, I would question you immediately. But apparently it's going to fly. She said, her declaration, black people have, quote, greater mental, physical, and spiritual abilities. I don't know how you qualify that. That's her statement. I consider that a racist statement. If you said it by a white person, I'd consider it a racist statement. She once hosted Professor Tony Martin, who's faced allegations of anti-Semitism, to speak in Harvard when she was president of the University of Black Students Association. So, yeah, there are questions about, are they going to really enforce the law, or are they going to be using it to simply push social, racial agendas? Listen, Where we need to have racial things corrected, yes, I'm all for it. But if you're just going to rewrite laws for the sake of doing it, you cannot do that, should not do that. I don't care if you're on the white side, the black side, the brown, or the yellow side, or red. So that's all they're doing. They're questioning some of these. But by doing that, by very challenging them, as Tapper is suggesting, this is equivalent to civil rights time. You're not going to allow any person of color to have a position of prominence. We're going to hear more on that in the next segment. Before I do, though, I want to share with you what the NAACP chief Derek Johnson just published in the far-left publication Salon. He referred to President Trump in a lawsuit by the NAACP for his attempted coup, calling it a coup, saying it was facilitated by right-wing fundraising groups and financiers, and he compared those inside the Capitol, and it was bad, it was atrocious, it was wrong, but he compares them with Al-Qaeda and Osama bin Laden. This is very reminiscent of what we had yesterday. Brian Williams from MSNBC saying, are they going to be as terrorists like jihadists? I mean, you know, come on. That's stretching it, don't you think? All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, we're going to pick up with a report that aired right behind Tapper as he set up the story that some of these folks are being denied their opportunity because it's race. You hear the CNN reporter and her story when we continue.
You can email Larry at LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com. LarryConnorsUSA@gmail.com.
I'm racing.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Two of President Joe Biden's picks for top Justice Department posts, both women of color, are on the receiving end of some of the most expensive and intense attacks by conservatives of any of his nominees.
She supports defunding the police, led a group that wants to reduce punishments on white supremacists, even terrorists.
In false and misleading multi-million dollar ads like this, Vanita Gupta and Kristen Clark, both seasoned civil rights attorneys, are being painted as radical choices.
Your record is one of an extreme partisan advocate. Your record is an ideologue.
In her confirmation hearing today for the position of Associate Attorney General, Gupta defended herself.
As a lifelong civil rights lawyer, I have committed my career to ensuring that the promises made in the Constitution are kept and that our federal laws are fairly and impartially applied. I do not support defunding the police.
Republicans have also accused civil rights lawyer Kristen Clark, who has been tapped to lead the DOJ's civil rights division, of reverse racism. For decades, Republicans have worked to stop the civil rights nominees of Democratic presidents using a similar playbook, conjuring fears about crime and accusations that they would implement preferential treatment for racial minorities. Gupta and Clark are just two nominees of color who have faced difficult paths to confirmation in a narrowly divided Senate, leading to accusations that they are being targeted because of their race or gender. Senator Tom Cotton, a Republican, pushed back on that suggestion today.
Can you oppose the nomination of a woman or a racial minority on the merits without being racist or sexist?
A lot of people watching this say it all seems to indicate that speaking frankly about race will be held against you if you're up for one of these civil rights posts. And it calls into question whether, you know, things have really changed very much since last year's supposed racial reckoning on race and criminal justice after those protests last summer.
So Senator Cotton said if we decide we're going to reject them on basis of merit, that's what we're deciding. But you're not allowed to do that in the Biden administration and the progressive left that stand there now because you're rejecting a person of color, so you have to be racist. There is no one on the left that admits that if we are calling out a black candidate or like Senator Tim Scott of South Carolina, calling him an Uncle Tom or something like that, that they're not being racist because they apparently are entitled. And they apparently can use that, but you obviously cannot. And no one should use it as a decision, a basis for a position. But what we're getting here is they're peddling the storyline again. just because these two are, as you heard the report begin, women of color. See, immediately they're putting that image in front of you. Women of color, they're under attack. Under attack, Republicans attack two Biden nominees of color up for top spots at DOJ. That's what read on the screen while she was giving her report. Gupta is Biden's pick for Associate Attorney General. Christian Clark, the nominee to head the Justice Department Civil Rights Division. Oh, footnote here, reference Gupta. Probably not a footnote to her. She would be the wealthiest member of the administration if she's selected. Vanita Gupta has between $42 million and $187 million in assets, according to the filings she put forward. So she obviously has done something to achieve and accomplish her empire of whatever she's doing. And now she wants to serve in this position? Okay. But I don't see them rejecting her because of color. If she's rejected, it's because of the mindset. And do we not see that change and that charge, I should say, every time a Republican nominee comes up, be it for the Supreme Court or be it for any other position that has to go through Senate confirmation, they're going to question immediately. They did it with Amy Coney Barrett, remember? Because she was Catholic. They're afraid her Catholicism would figure too much into her rulings. Do you remember that? Well, let me remind you of it. A white woman, a white Catholic woman, a mother, also a skilled legislator and law professor. But they focused on her religion. That's where we are again, unfortunately, in this country, that if you challenge anything and anyone, they can pull the race card. And that does not bring us unity. Why don't we have members of the left saying the same thing? Say, let's just quit calling it out like that. Why do we continue to stir the anthill like that? Why do we just look away from that kind of argument? Well, because it sells and they got an audience that buys into it. But there are fewer and fewer that do. And there are also more and more who are a, quote, minority who said, enough of this. I'm walking away from it. I'm not getting what I want with this party. You've taken advantage of me. You've taken me for granted. And I'm going to look elsewhere. May or may not be Republicans. But I'm going to go somewhere where I get at least some consideration for my ability rather than just the vote that you want and a voting block. H.R. 1 is another good example. H.R. 1 we've been focusing on a lot. This is the bill that would basically federalize all elections. I mean, the states, basically, under the 10th Amendment, are supposed to be able to do that if it's not specifically stated for the federal government nor reserved away from the states or kept from them, that then the states have the right to do it. They enforce their own election laws. When it comes to a federal election, there are certain things they have to follow, obviously. But still, they have a right to do it. They could set up their voting times, their schedules, and so forth. H.R. 1 would change a lot of that. It would simply take control of it and begin to rip it apart and change and rewrite a lot of these election laws. And so various states are also trying to increase their voter integrity, the voter integrity, and one of those states being Georgia. Republicans in Georgia, obviously, was very important this last time around. That is exactly why we have the situation we do in the Senate. As your Chuck Schumer earlier in this segment, or this hour, I believe, point out that we promised voters in Georgia, you support our candidates for Senate, and we get in there, we will pass what we say we will. And elections do have consequences. So now Republicans are releasing legislation proposing tougher restrictions on both absentee and in-person voting. Democrats, of course, won the presidential race in the state, flipped two U.S. Senate seats, and because the Republicans are tightening restrictions and absentee and so forth, well, obviously it must be racist. You must be trying to take control of the election going forward. Apparently, according to some reports I have here, is that many of the changes in the bill would, quote, predominantly affect larger minority-heavy Democrat strongholds. Well, it would affect all of them. It affects every part of Georgia, not just those, but they're going to make a big deal and say, well, obviously it's affecting us. And how's it going to do that? Well, It would provide uniformity to the three-week early voting period. They have a three-week voting early period in Georgia. They want to bring it uniformity, requiring all counties to hold early voting from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Friday, 3 weeks before the election, plus a mandatory 9 to 5 period of voting the second Saturday. It would prohibit counties from holding voting on any other days, including Sunday, which a lot say, well, if we had Sunday voting, the black vote would be stronger because they go right from church to voting. Does it say that they can't vote any other day, and are they not going to be able to vote unless they go to church service first? I'm just asking. But it's enough for the CNN wackadoos to come out and start pushing their storyline again. Here's Andrew, not Andrew, Chris Cuomo last night on CNN.
You and I have just aged 50 years, even more than what happened with the last administration. If we go back to Jim Crow type laws in this country, you can't give food and water to people waiting online to vote.
Yeah.
You can't vote on Sundays.
Souls to the polls.
10 times the amount of minority voters as non-minority on Sundays.
Yeah.
And that's just the beginning. And that's just in Georgia, a very important state.
Well, that's how you know you're not selling the right thing, is when you can't win by playing fairly, that you have to shape the rules in a way that will help you win, that will probably guarantee your win.
Oh, you mean like at Philadelphia, Pennsylvania? I mean, well, they said, please change the voting rules that you could go ahead and take absentee ballots for days later and just ignore what was already written. Is that what you're talking about? No, of course you're not. We're talking about Georgia. And this idea, if you're standing in line, you can't take food and water to them. Where the hell is that written? That's not written anywhere. Did it exist during Jim Crow laws? Probably did. But here again, it doesn't take an incident. It takes something that just uses an opportunity. They use it as an opportunity. Here's Don Lemon Fruitcake again.
It is going back to Jim Crow. This is Jim Crow Part 2, Jim Crow 2. And what it shows, though, I think more than anything, maybe this is the reason that Republicans are so hell-bent on talking about Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head, because one hand is doing one thing and the other hand is doing the thing that is going to get them, guarantee that they get elected, and that is going to hurt, really, black and brown voters. But they don't care, because that's what's going to get them
elected.
Well,
and at the same time, they're coaxing people along with this momentum of people are out to get you, they're out to destroy
white
what you
grievance.
Know.
White grievance. That's
and
what it is.
White grievance. This hell-bent on talking about Dr. Seuss and Mr. Potato Head, I mean, that has nothing to do with us other than the fact that throw it in there because we know the right is fighting cancel culture and they think that's wrong to do those kinds of things, ban Dr. Seuss and so forth. Does that not give you some idea of the absurdity of the argument? Oh, there's another point I want to raise, and something he said that might have just slipped by you, but when we come back, you're going to hear something else he says, and I'll point out the piece that might have just slipped by you. Oh, and this. You need to learn Espanol if you're going to speak it. I'll explain coming up.
Podcast of this program at Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA Facebook. Larry Connors USA.
People are afraid, as you saw with this insurrection, as you see with the whole fake, the election was stolen. People are afraid of the changing demographics of this country, but it's inevitable. It's inevitable. They're fighting a losing battle. What they're trying to do is, because America is going to be a minority-majority country, so what they're trying to do is set themselves up so that even though they are the minority in the future, that they will still be able to have power, political power, economic power, and so on.
So says Don Lemon Fruitcake about what's to come because you're afraid of, quote, the insurrection at the Capitol Hill. Coup d'etat, the coup attempt. coup d'etat. There was no coup d'etat. There was no insurrection. There were a bunch of yahoos that went stupid. Not one gun, not one gun, according to the FBI, was found in any of those that they arrested. Not one. Very hard to carry out an insurrection, would you think, without a gun? Now, they had other things that could be used as weapons, but come on, really? But Don Lemon said then, and kind of picking up on a point that he said a moment ago that might have slipped by, when he's talking about as states try to improve their voter integrity, requiring things like, oh, an ID. We just want to know who you are. I would think, and I've heard, actually, more minority voters say, I think it's a good idea. I don't want somebody stealing my vote. I got a cousin of me trying to go vote for me, and I know how they're going to vote, so I don't want them claiming that they're me. I want to vote for myself. You get there and you try to cast your vote, well, you've already voted. Then you got your vote be put aside as for examination later, maybe or maybe not counted. But when Lemon says all of this is by whites trying to hurt really black and brown voters, and he goes on to say that he's talking about people afraid, obviously he's talking about whites, that would include Democrats. He said they're fighting a losing battle. I got news for Don Lemon. If he's thinking that this minority thing is going to be all good for black and other minorities, they need to reconsider, because let me give you some numbers here. According to one of the latest breakdowns from 2019 by race and ethnicity, 60% of America is considered white. That would be, quote, non-Hispanic. This does not count Asian or multiple races or American Indian, Native Hawaiian, and so forth. Number two, Hispanic, 18.5%. Number three, black, 12.2%. What do the numbers represent in that percent? Black population, according to based upon those numbers, loosely 47 million. Hispanic population, based upon the 18.5%, 60 million and growing. More and more illegals coming in. The Hispanic population is exploding. I know it's exploding across Texas and exploding in other border areas. And I don't mean just illegals coming across. It's just exploding. I know the thought is, by some Democrats, it has been, we've got to cater to black voters because they're the future. They're realizing it or not. And quite honestly, black voters at some point are going to recognize and wake up to this, and the black caucuses as well. Hey, the Democrats are not after us anymore. They don't care about us. We're not that valuable. They're pushing the Hispanic. So when I hear Don Lemon Fruitcake and Chris Cuomo go on and on about that the whites are trying to suppress the black vote, actually, you better worry about black vote being suppressed by Democrats going forward. Hispanic Democrats. Because, again, as we've said and quoted numerous times, as Bob Dylan said, the times they are a-changing, and they will continue. If you think all of this is about maintaining and protecting black vote, you need to reconsider what's happening on the Hispanic population. I say, let's just talk about America. I don't care what your color is, your religion, your politics. I don't even care about that. You're an American, and you're entitled to certain things under our system. And yes, I want to make sure you have a right to vote. But yeah, I don't want you to just be able to vote, and you don't have any right to do so. The Democrats have no problem with illegals voting. I hope Don Lemon Fruitcake thought about that. But no, he's thinking Jim Crow laws. Jim Crow, we can refer to Jim Crow laws because it's a flashpoint. It's a way to get whites to back up, hold up their hands, and no, that's not what I meant. We're talking about election integrity for everyone. Do you not think that minority voters should have their vote protected as well? That's the purpose, to vote and protect everyone. It's the same thing about defunding police. Who's going to be hurt the most? The minority community. Do you not think they're entitled to have good protection? I think they are. Speaking of minority communities, you had the White House National Security Council, Roberta Jackson, yesterday talking about how they're trying to deal with all the southern border. And she said, supposedly in her statement, she said the border is closed. She said it in Spanish. She said, La frontera está cerrada. I probably have it mispronounced a little bit, but She's saying, La frontera está cerrada. The border is closed. But she actually said, La frontera no está cerrada. The border is not closed. Whoops. Yep, they do have a messaging issue, don't they? A big messaging issue. La frontera no está cerrado. Cerrada. Thanks for joining us as always. Back tomorrow. Remember our pledge. One nation under God.
This is Larry Connors USA.
Larry Connors USA.
Thank you for listening to Larry Connors USA. Please listen to previous and future podcasts.